So we're starting a new worship series today that will run through the rest of October, and it's called Reordering Our Lives. Did you notice the choir's black robes? Those were throwback. Those were cool. It was like 1950s. So this is all, you'll notice the graphic on the front is a black and white graphic. Laura designed that. So we're talking about rules, like moving beyond the rules in life, like getting to a place of wisdom. So this was an attempt, I guess it's not so subtle now that I'm mentioning it, to think about sort of black and white. The rules don't quite get us where we want to go in life, so there's this thing in the Bible called wisdom, and that's where we want to go. So I'm not going to say much more about the series. You'll get it as we move through it this month, but the idea is from the Jesuit priest Richard Rohr, who says maturing and deepening as people of faith is a lot like natural human development, moves through the same stages. So when you're young, learning the rules is important. Then you become a teenager and your job's to break all the rules that you can. But hopefully you move into adulthood, right, where there's something better, some kind of patterned life where there's some balance and there's some wisdom. So that's kind of what we're talking about this month, and I think you'll see it as we talk together about our gospel reading for today. So in your bulletins, right under the sermon line, the title today is The Blessing of Our Mistakes, but I want to direct your attention to this statement from Richard Rohr. It is our mistakes that lead us to God. We come to God not by doing it right, but by doing it wrong. I wonder whether you think this is true. So has it been true for you that your mistakes have led you to God? Has it been true for you and for people that you know that we come to God not by doing it right, but by doing it wrong? This isn't a test. You don't have to raise your hand. You don't have to vote. You don't have to agree with me or with Richard Rohr or whatever. I just want to get you thinking. To many of us, this will be a rather new mirror in which to see ourselves. So what would change if we came to see ourselves as those who can only come to God from the low places, from the dark places of our lives? We come to God not by doing it right, but by doing it wrong. Boy, if you've got kids, that sure sounds dangerous or permissive, doesn't it? After all, as a parent, I rarely find myself encouraging my children to make mistakes, to do it wrong, to mess up their lives. Most of my parenting involves trying to help them avoid making painful mistakes. And I myself rarely wake up in the morning and think to myself, well, I sure would like to screw something up today and get myself entangled in a royal mess of some sort. But I think Rohr's basic insight is that we change and we grow not during periods of success in life, but during periods of failure. So look at your own life for a minute and ask yourself, have the flashes of illumination, have the significant pivot points in your life, have they come during periods of consistency and success when things were going your way? Or did they come during hard periods of darkness and failure? Did your life swell with significance and purpose when you were winning? Or did it happen when you lost something that was incredibly painful? Are you more open for something new in life when you're confident and you're on track, things are going well, or when you're confused and frustrated? When Jesus teaches us that the tax collectors and the prostitutes are responding to the good news ahead of the religious types, ahead of the rule keepers, we're not quite sure what we should do with this news. Most of us grow up assuming that the parts of our lives that God finds most fruitful and interesting are our noble commitments, our heroic sacrifices, our reliable consistency, our steely discipline, and our impressive strengths. But in celebrating the tax collectors and the prostitutes, Jesus appears to be telling us that this topsy-turvy, head-scratching good news of God's love works in a very, very different way. Throughout the Gospels, we see again and again that those people who are labeled sinners, that's kind of a category, sinners, these people have a kind of insight and a perspective that other people don't have. When a sinful woman, likely she was a prostitute, she's called a sinful woman,
When she anointed Jesus' feet with perfume, the religious man who was hosting the feast criticized Jesus for even allowing this woman to touch him. But Jesus makes this woman the hero of the story, says Jesus she loves much because she has been forgiven much. Again, Jesus once told a story about two different kinds of people who are praying near one another. The morally upstanding person prays. So if you find, this sounds a lot like your prayers, you've got work to do, okay? So the morally upstanding person prays, God, I thank you that I am not like other people, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this terrible tax collector. I fast twice a week and I give a tenth of all I earn. Jesus says when the tax collector prays, he cannot even raise his head. And his prayer is simple. God have mercy on me, a sinner. That's Luke 18. And by the way, if you never made the connection, that's what we sing after we confess our sins. And Jesus said it was the posture and the prayer of the person who prays out of a great and aching need that Jesus praises. So if the scribes, if the religious professionals, if the teachers of the law in today's gospel reading show us anything, they show us that God can't do much with us when we're strong, when we're proud, when we're confident. Like these experts, we want to be the ones who get to ask the question, by whose authority are you doing these things? We want to be the ones in charge. But when we come before God with all the answers, we're not ready to learn anything. When we wake up in the morning sure of our path, we're not ready to grow. When the lion's share of our life energy is devoted to impressing other people and creating an aura of sufficiency, we leave ourselves no room to maneuver. If we can't come to grips with our great need, we will never, ever be capable of falling in love, which I think is the point. On the other hand, these tax collectors, these prostitutes, they remind us that we really can change. Something simple but wonderful can happen for us like it did for them. Jesus points to these people with difficult lives, messy lives. He does so not to celebrate the mistakes and the bad choices they may have made in life. He points to them because there was something about their difficult path that allowed them to hear the good news of the preaching of John the Baptist and to respond. They fell in love because they were looking for it. So if we're open to something new, God really can move us from being in charge to being in love. Very different things. To be in charge is to be in control. It's to be the one asking all the questions, to be the one who keeps the rules, keeps score. It's to be the kind of person who lives before God in a kind of false confidence. It's a terrible way to live, really, but many of us do this. To be in love, on the other hand, is to be in touch with some deep need within us. To be in love is to be the kind of person who can laugh and dance and celebrate with others. But to make this move from being in charge to being in love will depend on whether we can find the blessing of our mistakes. We will have to learn, as Richard Rohr puts it, that it is our mistakes that lead us to God. What Jesus is trying to teach us, I think, is not really all that complicated. Those who try to earn the love and respect of others by their performance must by all means stay in charge and stay in control. But those who already know that they're in great need of something different and new will always trade in being in charge for falling in love like that in a heartbeat. They know what they want. I can see this dynamic at work in my own life. Let me give you a few examples of, I think, what Jesus is trying to teach. And so for me, all of us store negative energy in the different parts of our bodies. Stress and anxiety, doctors know this now. They lodge in the body. They can affect your immune system. They can manifest as shingles. They can affect the bacteria in your stomach. For me personally, stress manifests in a couple of ways, in headaches and in lower back trouble. So for many, many years, I didn't understand this connection between my what's going on in my body and the different kinds of stress I was experiencing. Being in therapy helped a lot with me making these connections. I still have these symptoms. They're a little less frequent. I still have them. So I have to work very hard to listen to what my body's telling me. And when I fail to listen, when I rush ahead, when I take on too much stuff, when I worry about things I can't control, then my body stops me cold in my tracks and refuses to let me move forward. And when that happens, I have no choice but to slow down, to admit my limitations, to remove a few things from my plate. So think about what's going on for me. I don't learn about balance and about health from the productive and fruitful and successful parts of my life. I learn it when things go wrong. Steve Jobs is the co-founder of Apple, and his entrepreneurial brilliance made huge changes in a whole bunch of different industries and personal computers, animated movies, music, phones, tablets, digital publishing, probably some other stuff I'm not aware of. But before he became that Steve Jobs, he was a high school kid who did not want to go to college. His parents basically made him go, and so he went reluctantly to Reed College in Portland. It was kind of a slacker school for hippies. But even that environment was way too structured for Steve Jobs. There were required classes, kids had to take them, and he just refused to do anything that anyone told him to do. So he refused to go to the required classes. The school actually allowed him to drop out, to stop paying his tuition so that he could just audit whatever classes he wanted, just flit in and out of stuff. And one of the classes that he sat in on was a class on calligraphy. And while auditing that course, he fell in love with the design and the shape of letters and the spaces between the letters. At this point, as I mean, 18 or 19, he had no idea what he wanted to do in life, but these multiple typefaces became a feature of all Mac computers, and all of that was a direct result of him sitting in on that calligraphy course. So think about what happened for him. College was a mistake in a way for Steve Jobs, but even the mistake proved productive later on. Lots of you know Bobby Kim Nye. I spent some time with Bobby this week. I was getting some of her advice on the art festival I'm helping to plan later this spring. We were standing in her pottery workshop, and I asked her how she started doing pottery. She told me that she and several others, Elaine, did you do that class with her, I think? Yeah. Took a class with Sammy Emery, and they lived in the house that John and Carol Hill live in now, so it was in the carriage house. Behind that, pottery class. So she said her first pinch pot did not work at all. Terrible experience. And she described the second project. I can't remember what it was. But she said she got so frustrated that she wound up just beating a flat piece of clay with a stick for a long time in class. That doesn't sound creative. So this pottery experience wasn't at all what she thought it would be like. And so even though she'd paid for several classes up front, ahead of time, she told Sammy Emery that she was done, this wasn't for her, she was not coming back and taking any more of the classes. So the instructor acknowledged her frustration, but she begged her not to give up, to give it one more try, come back the following week. And so reluctantly, she agreed to come back for one more. And when she went back the next week, Bobby said, something happened. Working with the clay the second week was magic for her. She knew right then that she had found what she wanted to do for the rest of her life. So think about what's going on. She chose to stay in that uncomfortable place of frustration long enough so that it would pay off when a door opened, sort of a new path opened out of that frustration. Let me give you one last example here. The New York Times ran a feature story recently entitled From Prison to PhD, The Redemption and Rejection of Michelle Jones. So in the early 1990s, the heartrending story. In the early 1990s, 14-year-old Michelle Jones became pregnant from a sexual encounter that was not consensual. Her unstable mother beat her with a board, terribly, hoping to end that pregnancy. After she finally gave birth to a boy, she, as a young mother, had a nervous breakdown, during which she abused and neglected the boy, which all led to his death. She was sentenced, rightly so, to 50 years in prison, with the possibility of parole after 20 years for good behavior. And she was paroled just recently. While in prison, she earned her bachelor's degree from Ball State University. She began graduate work in American history. She did work on the history of the American prison system and received awards for that work. She turned her life around while she was in prison. She was encouraged by many of her mentors to apply for a graduate degree to do PhD work in history. And just this past year, she was admitted to the American History Program at New York University and started her work there this fall. So does a poor black mother, a convicted criminal with severe emotional trauma in her past, a mother charged with the death of her young son, does she deserve such an opportunity? Now, I don't pretend to know the whole story. There were some schools that rejected her precisely because of her past. I can understand that too. But when Jesus says that those at the back of the line and those at the bottom of the heap are closest to God, I suppose he has in mind people like Michelle Jones. Through a terrible ordeal, a crime she committed and for which she has taken responsibility, she was able to find a door through which she could move forward into a new and different kind of life. She wants to contribute something to our understanding of the history of the prison system. She wants to give back. Of course, there was no blessing in the terrible death of her son. That's not the point. There are some things that we do that we can't undo. But there was a blessing in the way the support and encouragement of many mentors helped her to find this new path forward. Jesus teaches us that there's this promising newness that can emerge in the lives of unpromising people. This good news can free us from all of our silly and foolish maps about who's close to God and who isn't. Those people we assume are far from God may be much closer than we think, and those who see themselves as close to God probably aren't. It might just be that those closest to God are people with disabilities, those who are sick, children playing in sandboxes, those nearing the end of life, surly teenagers, and all those who have failed in some sort of life-defining project. Jesus teaches it that there's this promising newness that can emerge from the unpromising parts of our lives. And this good news frees us from the terrible burden of wishing we had some other life to live. We're freed from carrying around the burden of other people's expectations of who we should be, where we should go, what we should do. Where there are challenges or disabilities for us, where there are failures and mistakes, those can become the places in which we find the grace and the love of God most clearly available to us. This is, of course, not to celebrate the pain that we've experienced, nor is it to downplay the hard things that have happened to all of us. It's simply to confess that we are not likely to find deep joy and satisfaction by replaying the highlight reels of our lives. If we really, really want to change and grow, it will be in the pain and the disappointment and the heartache that we will find this new door to life abundant. Amen.